This episode of Rax Fur and Feathers is brought to you by Red Bud Liquor at 3213 West Front Street in Buchanan, Michigan. The largest selection of liquor and craft beer in the area and the coldest beer in Bucktown.
Also, they are now selling hunting and fishing licenses, so stop in, see Greg, and pick yours up today. I'm Bert.
I'm Adam.
I'm Ray.
And this is the Rax Fur and Feathers Podcast. All right. So today our guest is Mr. David Kennedy.
Back again.
Hello.
Not a Hail Mary episode.
No, we actually planned on having this one happen, and it turned out great. We talked about...
A lot of bear hunting.
Bear hunting stories.
California.
Bear speculation, a little bit about the state. And the union that has a bear on the flag that has nothing to do with bear hunting.
Had a good time. West.
Did some out
situations
west
situations out west.
Right.
The problem with the youth these days.
Kids these days.
Anyway, we had a great time. I think you guys are going to dig it.
Yeah, pay attention. You're about to learn something.
So, here we go.
Might as well grab me one while you're there.
At least you noticed it.
I glanced at him like, why the fuck
this
are we
whole
only,
fucking thing?
Why are we only
God
1 minute?
Damn it, Bert. Why do you hate him so much?
So how does that happen?
That was just my fault. I just hit. I apparently
he was gone.
I looked down. And I was like, 1 minute. That doesn't make any damn sense.
So how much of the bear story did we catch?
Well, I missed the part about you being right out of high school, and you guys all had good jobs. So you said, let's go hunt some bears, and. That's about when.
That's when the fat finger came into play.
Right. So we just start all the way over.
I think so. Hi, I'm Adam.
No, we're good. We can keep going with the bear. I don't think
minus his new buffalo joke.
No,
we'll leave that out.
It wasn't a joke, man. It was history. History as I know it to be.
Yeah. Mama said.
So anyway, we're in Canada. You're in Canada.
Here we are in Canada.
There's. Our group had six guys, and there was another group of six guys there. Put us in a big bunkhouse, which really wasn't that bad. And we had a great big Ford Econoline van, and he basically gave us a logging road that was, I don't know, maybe 30 miles long. And he had baits set up every 5 or 8 miles or so. So... got one person dropped off, you drive down, the other person, you know, and then the guy at the end would park the van and hunt. And being so hot, my bait, I mean, it was just luck of the draw. My bait was being hit every single day, and only one of the other ones were being hit sometimes. But we kept at it, you know, and us not knowing anything, you know, the guy's like, well, you know, they're due to hit, it's hot. As soon as it cools off, you know, blah, blah, blah. You guys are going to get them, you know, give them the big pep talk and everything.
Right.
And so the first 3 days, 80 degrees, you're setting up in a stand, and the black flies and mosquitoes were unbelievable.
Really?
Oh, you had to tape your wrists shut, you had big, like, hoops coming off of your head with head netting that you'd have to tape up, and you'd be sitting there in your stand all night long listening to you'd shake your head every once in a while and they'd come off and then they'd come back on. I mean, all afternoon long sitting in that stand. But
that's a pretty good mosquito impression, by the way.
I had a lot of practice that week.
Do you remember what you guys were using for bait?
It was whatever they could scrap up, a lot of donuts and bread, and I think he had some oil, like fryer oil, deep fry oil, stuff like that.
Okay.
But they had metal cans sunk partially into the ground, and then they put the bait in them, and then the metal can lids, you know, they have the grippers, well, they had those out. So they would sit on top of it, and then you'd put a big rock on it, and so that other critters couldn't get in there.
Right.
And I had a raccoon that came in every single night, and that kept me just totally amazed and the humor of it was just, it made the time pass, because he would get in there and he'd reach in there, the little voids where the top was, and you could see him just reaching in there, you know, and reaching and reaching, and oh, he'd grab a hold of something and try and pull it out, but he'd have all that crap wadded in his hand.
And he wouldn't let
it
go.
So he couldn't get it out of there. And he'd finally get it out and eat. And after a couple of days, I'd take some of the pastries and run them up a sapling and put the pastry on top of the sapling. And he would come there and smell it, and he'd climb up those things, and he'd be whipping around trying to get to the top of that, you know. And so the fourth day, woke up. It was cloudy, cool, drizzly, and I mean, it was money.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we're all fired up. It's like, oh, you know.
Today's the day.
Finally cooled off and everything. We're all excited. And the day before, one of the other group bow hunters were talking about forgetting their arrows when they went to their stand. And we were all laughing. How could you do that? You know, ha, ha, ha.
Right.
Well, I always kept my shells behind the passenger seat, and then my gun was in a case. In Ontario, you weren't supposed to uncase your gun until you got to the tree. And being in the wood, it was probably a 150-yard walk from the road to the stand. And I'm like, there ain't no way. A bear in the woods? Right. I'm not doing that. So I'd get right off the road. There was a little meadow on the other side of the tree line from the road, and that's where I would unpack my gun, load it, and walk into my stand. Well, we were all excited, fired up. You know, I grabbed my gun. Hey, see you guys. You know, I was the second guy. See you guys. Take off. Ooh, you know. So I get in there, open up my case, and I have no shells. Absolutely no shells to my gun.
The definition of irony.
Yeah. So I go out to the road, and I'm thinking that the only guy who had a 30-06 was the end guy, which is, you know, 20 miles down the road.
Ugh.
So I'm sitting there and thinking about it, cussing and bitching. And then I remembered when I got to the truck that night, I was one shell short in my packet, you know, the
shell holder
carton that the shells come in. So I get in there and start looking around through the weeds, and I find that one Holy shell that I shit. Happened to drop. Wow. I mean, this story is just, it played out unbelievable. So I have one shell.
It's your destiny.
To kill a bear.
What I can't believe is you just didn't get on your cell phone and call the guy that was just a few.
Yeah, in 1980. What's a cell phone?
I don't know.
What's Facebook?
I still don't know what
Internet
Facebook
what?
Is. So. Al Gore didn't invent that yet.
Got her all loaded up and went to my stand, and there was fresh bear tracks in the mud on the trail. There's like an old two-track going back to where the stand was. There was fresh bear tracks in there. So I went in there and dumped the bait in, because we all took a bucket of bait out with us. And got up in my stand, and I'm looking around, and I had a 6-cell mag light with me, my knife, and one bullet. So, so I climbed up into this tree, and it was basically a platform built in between three trees, and you sat on a bucket up there, and sitting up there, you know, thinking that my hunt is done, you know, with all this crap going on. And my raccoon came in, and he wasn't acting like he normally was. He'd come in, and then he'd run out. He'd come in, and then he'd run out. And he kept doing that. Like, and finally, he'd stand up and look around, you know, on his back feet, and then he'd run. And I knew something was up.
Right.
So I just hung out, and pretty soon, here comes this bear walking in my path. Right into the bait, right into the side of the bait. And I was like, oh, God, you got to be kidding me. So he came in, and it was about probably 16 yards away. And he had walked around the bait bucket and got in, turned perfectly broadside, got up on top of that rock, broadside, and started trying to get that rock off of there. So I pulled up on him, you know, put the scope on him, pulled the trigger, and click. And that bear looked up at me, and I was like,
oh, shit.
Yeah. So I just froze, and he went back to doing that, and I had just bought that. I bought that gun, a Remington 700 BDL 30-06, because I was hunting bear, so I needed something.
Right.
And I hadn't had a lot of practice with that, and not a lot of practice with bold actions at the time, so I didn't realize, I didn't know if I had to, you know, I knew I had the shell in there because that was the only one I had.
Right.
So when I pulled the bolt up, it re-cocked itself. You know, I thought I was going to have to jack the whole thing, but when I pulled it up, it reset itself.
Oh, the safety, right.
So I put it back down, and he was still trying to get that rock off of there, and I pulled up again. I was like, well, here goes, you know, and bam! It went off that time, and he jumped, and the weeds were like chest high out through the forest there. And he took off running and kind of ran down this hill, and I lost him. You know, I couldn't see him, couldn't hear, couldn't do anything. So I'm sitting up there, and I was like, now what do I do? And the guide had just told us about that area several weeks before that, where a guy had shot a small bear. And they came back that night, and a bigger bear had actually came and started eating that bear. So I'm sitting up in my stand thinking, I don't want another bear eating my bear. You know, right. This is my first black bear.
Right. You got to get to
it. So I get out of I grab my mag light and my knife, because that was the only thing I had.
I'm going to club him and stab him.
And I had my backpack on the tree, and when I grabbed my light, it fell out of my hand, hit the stand, hit the tree, and fell on the ground. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know? So I get down there, and light worked, which is a good thing. So I go up to the bait, and I'm looking for blood, and got my knife and my mag light, and I'm going after this bear. And had no blood, so I kind of followed where I thought he was and got about 30, 35 yards away, and I could see him. Laying down in this stuff.
Right.
So I'm watching and watching, and I started grabbing sticks and throwing it at him, you know, hiding behind a tree the whole time in case he took off or whatever. But he was dead. So it was still probably an hour before dark and about 2 hours before I got picked up. So I'm thinking, what do I do now? You know, I didn't want to go to the road and have another bear come and eat my bear.
Right.
So I'm kind of hanging out by him and hanging out by him. And then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, this is pretty stupid. So I got all my gear and went out to the road and waited for my guys. And when we got there, one of the guys came back with me, and everybody else went into town to get the guide and his truck to put the thing in. And we got back there and found it, and talking about this whole big bear thing and no guns. You know, you can't have handguns in Canada, right. So there was nothing. So we ended up, we didn't want to drag it because you didn't want the hair to fall off of it. So we ended up tying its front legs together and its back legs together and found a long pole.
Yeah.
And did the Buana thing and lugged that thing all the way out to the road. And about the time we got to the road, the guide pulled up to throw in his truck.
Nice.
So, how big was he?
It was about 260 pounds field dressed. So it was a pretty decent
big
bear.
It was a boar, not a sow?
Yeah, it was a boar.
Nice.
Yep. So
how big was your bear, Adam?
She dressed out about 120. So...
I can't talk shit bigger than mine.
Tell you what.
Say, how big was yours, Bert? Right.
It was tender. Winnie the who?
So how far up in Canada did you have to go for that?
I can't remember how long the drive is, but it would be north and east of Sault Ste. Marie. probably 2 or 3 hours.
You probably said that in the beginning of the story that I didn't capture because I didn't hit record.
when I went up to Ontario, I went to Nipigon, and it's north. We went out to see St. Marie.
I was going
to
say, how far is that from
crossed
where
you into Canada, at? A long ways away. Once we got into Canada, I think we drove from Niles up to crossing into Canada. It's like, 8 hours, 10 hours, something like that. Get across the bridge through the UP up into Sault Ste. Marie. And we drove another 2 or 2.5 hours on the highway up there. I think it's 17. Because when you get out of Sault Ste. Marie, you can either go east or you can go west. There's not really a whole lot of other options. So we went west. And
around the top of Lake Superior.
Yes, sir. Yep. We followed Lake Superior all the way up until we got to this hotel my grandpa's been staying at ever since he's been going up bear hunting for 10 years now. So the people know him and know what he's up there for. We pulled in and it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, been driving all day. Everybody's tired. Didn't pay any attention to the scenery or nothing. We get up the next day and it's like this hotel was on the side of a mountain. It's pretty cool. Like, you walk out of your hotel and you're like, oh, Jesus, I'm glad no rocks fell overnight because it would have killed us all. And then we had to drive at least another 10 hours, maybe 12 hours from there. So it was a hell of a trip. Yeah. Altogether, I think it was 20 or 22 hours to get to where we were going in Nipigon. And that was to meet up with the guide.
Keep talking.
Which I will use loosely because he was actually a hotel manager at a little bullshit hotel. And his name is Bob Behrman. Heck of a nice guy. Knows a lot about bears. Put us onto, like you said, like a logging road, basically. Mm-hmm. 20-25 minutes away from the hotel there. And one of his buddies, what's his name? Ted? I don't know his last name. Yeah, but he's like Teddy Bear, basically. Is what I referred to him as the whole time. Because to get back to his cabin in the woods, well, you would never know it's there unless he told you where to go. And it took every bit of the four-wheel drive and the suspension that my truck had to get us back there. It was, we pulled a trailer with 2 four-wheelers, 4 or 5 50-gallon cardboard drums of donuts with us. And the first thing you do when you get back on this log path is you come up to a ravine where there's a creek that flows through there. And there is no way in hell you're getting a tandem axle trailer across this ravine. It goes down, it comes back up. So we had to drop the trailer, load everything up in my truck and on the four-wheelers and hightail it back to the cabin, which was like an easy half-hour trip down this two-track that you would never even think there's a cabin back in the woods. And all of a sudden you come up, if you're bouncing across all the rocks, because the terrain in Canada is tremendously different than the terrain that we have out here. There's a lot more rocks, like standing boulders and just rough, really rough ground. So you get back and you make kind of like a hairpin turn, you come down through these 2 pine trees, and here is this little cabin out in the middle of nowhere. It's like a 12 by 14 or 12 by 12 cabin, not real big. It had been tore up by porcupines, ironically.
Porcupines
and quill pigs, and they had eaten a lot of the deck.
Quill pig.
Quill pig's got your stickers. Ask a knob in the moonlight. Yeah, and that was our experience. Like, he basically turned us loose in the woods. The guide stayed at the hotel in town, and we stayed out in the woods, an easy 45 minutes away from anybody at all or anything. There's no cell service. And I've told the story before after I shot my bear, and then I went up in a different stand where I had shot my bear from. And I just thought I'd take some pictures of bears. I was, I already filled my tag, which, by the way, a tag up there at this point, it's almost $400 for a non-resident single black bear. You can only get one. And that's when I had the cub run up the tree next to me, and the mama bear was on the ground, and then the boar was over somewhere. I couldn't see him, but he was huge because I could hear him, and I was scared. And all I had was a mag light and a knife, and I'm holding my knife, and this mag light, it's getting dark, and I'm waiting on my brother to come pick me up. The same situation, he dropped me off on the way to his stand, and he had to come back and get me on the way back to the cabin. And so I'm holding my knife and my mag light in this tree with my backpack on, looking at this bear cub next to me in the tree, and I'm thinking, as soon as this sow knocks the ladder stand out from underneath me and I fall, I'm probably going to fall on my knife. Like, that's just how lucky I am. And it's not going to kill me. It's just going to hurt really bad. She's going to maul me. The boar might come in and maul me. I'm going to survive, but I'm going to be all screwed up.
Pretty cool scars.
Yeah, I need more.
Good
I guess.
Story. Good story.
No, but that's all I had was a knife and a mag light, and I feel your pain.
Yeah.
It's a scary situation to be in because you start second guessing a lot of decisions that you make when you know that you're up against nature's apex predators. Like, and it's worse if you can't see them. All you can do is hear them. Because, like you said, the brush is chest high. If you're not in the clearing where the bait barrel is and where the stand is next to the tree, you can't see. Even in the tree stand, you can barely see out in the woods around you. Everything's so thick. Like,
and most times you will not hear a bear come in.
Right.
You may hear a twig snap, possibly, but generally they just appear.
They're so,
I've heard a lot of stories about people turkey hunting. And all of a sudden, there's a bear. Just, right, it's like right next to him.
Yeah,
not fun.
My buddies have a bear camp and have had for probably 30 years now up in the UP. And for years, I would go up there for the first week, whether I had a permit or not. And I would bait with them and we'd ride quads and I'd trout fish. And they had a lot of clients that wouldn't set in a stand by themselves. So I'd do that and film for them, or I'd go around to different baits and see what bears were coming into the different baits.
Right.
But I always had a hog leg with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was, you know, between the wolves and the bears, you walk out of there at night, it ain't the most warm and fuzzy feeling.
No, it's not. Reminds me of being a kid. You're not afraid of the dark, but you're afraid of what's in the dark. And when you can't see it, it's even
worse.
Hey,
man, I'm with you.
I mean, it is what it is. I don't care. You know, you guys talk shit about it if you want to, but I've never been more scared in my life walking to that four-wheeler. When my brother walked up to me, he's like, all right, you know, let's go. And I'm like, no bears. There's bears everywhere. Get the gun. Get the gun now. I'm like, go back to the four-wheeler. Get the gun. Come back and get me, because I'm not walking out with you and getting mauled unless one of us has a gun. At least then we have a chance.
Well, I think I told a story before about when I was like 18. It was like my first, maybe my second trip up to deer camp up in the UP. It's thick up there. You can't see shit. So we used to hunt these old fire lanes. So I used to come through and cut these fire breaks or whatever years ago, and they occasionally come through and keep up on them. That's where we hunted, because that's really the only clearings you have up there in the North Woods. Well, my brother dropped me off in my fire lane, and I go walk down, and I'm following wolf tracks the entire way.
Perfect.
Right. He drives off. He's gone. Just sitting there with my flashlight, my 30-06, in the dark, following wolf tracks to my blind. And they went in my blind.
The wolves did?
The wolves did.
Oh, that's good.
Right. I'm like, oh, that's fine. It's fine.
In case you thought you could hide. Like, no.
So have you been up to Canada hunting anything else besides bear? Adam, please.
Yeah, actually,
get a beer.
No, I got one here.
Pass it on, please.
I would say I've never been so close to death as one of the elk hunts that I took up in Alberta, because of horses.
Really?
Horses. I hate horses.
I never. You know what? I've never trusted a horse. Now that we're on the topic,
they have no brake and they have no throttle.
Right.
It's whatever they want to do. And
besides that, they look at you sideways all the time. They're just untrustworthy animals.
We were out in Wyoming one year antelope hunting, and the place where we parked the fifth wheel was right by a corral. This rancher owned and leased 250,000 acres, and that's nice. But
that's all.
I think quarter of a million. It seems like per square mile, it was so sparse that it was like maybe 10 or 12 cows per square mile that they could graze. So he had to have a lot of land.
Right.
But in this corral area, they had sheep up in the high country. And as it turns out, the week that we were there, they were bringing some of the sheep down to load them up, to take them to market or whatever they did with them. And they had these guys with, I think they were called cutting horses, but we were watching them and these sheep were chucking and jiving, you know, and these horses were just following right along. You know, they'd run and stop, plant themselves, turn. And I was looking at that like, that is the coolest thing, you know. And I came home and we had 10 acres out in Eau Claire. And I told my wife, we're going to buy horses, you know. And, oh, God, that's so cool. And my wife is looking at me like, are you freaking crazy? So finally, after talking to horse people and stuff, I got out of that. So fast forward to the Alberta hunt. It was an elk and moose hunt in between Alberta and British Columbia in the Rocky Mountain Range there. I mean, we were just like 4 miles from the Continental Divide. It was the most beautiful country I've ever seen in my life. It was just gorgeous. But it was a horseback hunt. So get out there, you know, remote camp, had all these horses, and like the second day, hopped on all these horses and went back behind camp to see what we could find. And all the guides and one of the guides' dad and brother came along also. They have their horses that they grew up with, basically.
Sure.
Well, they had these two horses that when you put a saddle on it, the saddles looked like napkins on them. I mean, they weren't draft horses, but
just big.
They looked like
huge,
it.
Right?
Yeah. So me and this guy from Pewaukee, Wisconsin, got on these horses, and you had to hold your bow up so it wasn't in the peripheral vision of the horse, and you didn't want the back of the bow to hit their back end.
Right.
You know, so you're basically holding on to the reins with one hand and holding your bow underneath, and you know, just clip-clopping along, bloop-bloop, bloop-bloop, and you'd come across a huge pile of berry-filled grizzly bear crap in it was basically that road there was an old logging road that went along the side of a mountain all the way around and wrapped around down this great big draw. And we're clip-clopping along, you know, and the guide's carrying a short 870 12 gauge with slugs in it, carrying it right on his lap because of the grizzlies. And he's pointing all this out, you know, and the horses would get kind of spooky smelling the bears.
Oh, yeah.
You
for
know?
Good reason. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and the guy was probably in his 60s at that time, but they grew up in that stuff, you know. And, mm-hmm. and when we were talking about mountain lions, this guy said that that's the only thing in the woods that he's afraid of. Because you never know until they come after you. They're so quiet. They're so sly. They're
talk about apex predator. Yeah.
Yeah. They got the they'll set and wait and jump, you know, before you even know it. So anyway, we're clip-clopping along, and we came around this bend, and an elk bugled up in the mountains to the one side. So guide's like, yeah, you know, the elk will bugle when they hear the clip-clopping of the horses. We'll go up here and tie the horses up.
Thinking it's another elk?
I don't know why it does it. I don't know if it's the noise or what it is, but that elk was bugling like crazy up there.
Huh.
So we no sooner get...
He's like, I ain't never had no horse before. Give me some. Shit.
Yeah, look at that, Philly.
Right.
Sorry.
So we get like 100 yards down there, and this Carl, the guy from Pewaukee, and I were... Our horses were next to each other, you know, and our horses just take off running for no reason at all.
Oh, shit.
And you have one hand on the rein, you got your arm on your bow. Neither one of us knew how to ride a freaking horse.
Right.
And these things are running full blast, and you're trying to pull back on the reins because they say if you pull their head to the side, they'll stop.
Right.
Well, with one hand, you couldn't do that. Plus, we weren't ready, you know, because that whole ride there was just, you know, leisurely, you know, talking away.
He wasn't ready. And,
you know, we're both pulling back and yelling, "Whoa! Whoa!" As we're flying down this two-track, you know, the right side is a straight down drop into this valley.
Awesome.
And you could see, I mean, the eyes on those things are huge. And they were running next to each other, and you could see them looking at each other. And it was almost like if one wasn't going to stop, the other one wasn't going to stop.
I ain't going to stop.
So we get all the way down this draw, way to the bottom, where they finally start settling down, where we could get them stopped. And these horses are just shaking. I mean, absolutely shaking. And, of course, Carl and I were ready to crap our pants after that. So we got off these horses, and I told my guide, Randy, I was like, "I'm done. I'll walk back." "No, no, no, you know, let's tie the horses up. We'll go hunt, you know, blah, blah, blah."
No.
So we tied the horses up, and it took off for probably 3 hours and kind of hunted and got back to the horses at dark. So we've got, I don't know how many miles back in the dark with these horses.
I was saying it's already dark and you got to come back.
So I told him, I was like, "I'll just walk along behind you with this horse." "No, no, you can't do that, you know. This horse will be fine, blah, blah, blah." "All right, well, no problem."
He wasn't just fine.
Right.
Yeah. So
he must have just run it out of his system is all that was.
So me, being gullible, "Okay, no problem. Hop back on the horses." I mean, of course, in the mountains, at dark, there's no lights. There's no nothing except for what moon is out there.
Right.
And you could kind of see where the two-track was, and we were in a line. There was four horses, and mine and Carl's were in the back. And Carl's horse was, every once in a while, the shoe would spark on a rock, and it would make my horse jump.
Oh.
And my horse was getting nervous from that.
Right.
And I was telling him, I was like, "Randy, you know, this horse is freaking out here." "No, no, no. Just be cool, you know. We'll talk and it'll be fine and we'll okay, you know, and blah blah blah."
At least take my bow.
So we're going along and going along, and like a squirrel or something goes running off into the forest. And my horse just freaks out, takes off running.
Perfect.
And the other horses are in front of it, so it jumps off to the side of the mountain, down the steep slope, and is going full blast. And of course, through the trees and everything, you know, and your legs, the horse is going through the trees, but your legs aren't.
Right.
So you're getting caught on all this, and I'm yelling, "Randy, stop this fucking horse," you know, and just yelling, "Randy," and trying to, you know, you're trying to duck because of legs and stuff. And this horse is just barreling through there, and you can't pull back. You know, because you have no strength in the lead when you're hunkered over on the thing's back trying to not get knocked off the horse. And he's running about 40 yards parallel to this two-track. And we kind of get to an opening, and there's a tree with a branch. And I'm like, "I'm jumping off on this branch." And he's like, "No, no, no."
I saw it in a John Wayne movie once.
Right, he plows off to the side with his horse and gets in front of mine and stops it. So I get off and I'm like,
I'm done.
So we walk the horses
up. I might shoot this horse.
And and I'm like, "This is ridiculous. I'm not doing this anymore." And, you know, get the horses around and get those settled down. And he's like, "No, you know, we got a long ways back." He says, "You can't do that. It'll be fine. It'll be fine."
Famous last words. Yeah. You've heard that before.
He's like, we'll just talk.
It's okay.
You know, just make sure we have casual conversation. Don't get excited, and it'll keep the horses calm.
I'm all tired of fucking talking, Randy.
Yeah.
Now, did he ever offer to give you his horse?
No.
No.
Hell no, he didn't, because your horse was crazy as hell.
Right.
Absolutely not. So
you would think, being a guide, that would have been one of his first steps is, "Here, take my horse. It's not going to do this to you. I can handle this wild horse. I'll help you out."
Because he knows if he has to shoot a grizzly bear with the shotgun on his lap with that horse.
It, in a real fuck his world, life.
Yeah. Well, no, he'd give him the shotgun too. Fuck it, that horse. His horse can handle it, apparently.
So, I get back on this horse. We go slower. Keep the horses all butted up together so they can't see the sparking and shit. Well, there was one area where the two-track had washed out completely down the side of this mountain, where the two-track actually went down to, like, one track. And right. Randy's horse went through there. His dad's horse went through there. Carl's horse went through there to the right. Well, mine went to the left.
Oh, good.
And he's right on the edge of this thing, overlooking this washout, just right at the edge of it. And I'm like, you know, pulling to the right.
Come on, guy.
Pulling
come on,
to the
guy.
Left.
This way.
And I'm like, Randy, we have a problem.
We're going to die. He's like, we're both going to die.
He's like, a horse will never jump off of anything it can't see the bottom to.
That is
are
such
you
bullshit.
Sure?
And I'm like, dude, he's not doing anything, you know? And he's right on the edge of it. I mean, it's. I swear to God, it dropped off hundreds of feet down into the bottom of this thing. So he turns around and starts coming back. And when my horse sees that, mine goes there. So we're butted up in the middle of this washout on the single track, nose to nose. So he starts backing up. And when he does that, the back feet of his horse falls off of the edge of this thing.
Oh, my fucking
God. And the front feet of his horse is the only thing that's holding on to solid ground.
Right.
And he's a pretty big dude. I mean, he was probably 250, 280.
Wow.
And his horse. And I'm watching this thing, and it's trying to get its back legs up.
Right.
To get some solid footing.
Yeah.
And its front legs are just locked in, holding both of them up on the edge of this thing.
Wow.
And finally, the horse gets one leg up and was able to pull him up out of there. And then, of course, my horse, he just follows right along, you know, and we get off and...
jumps off the edge a little bit, too, just for fun.
Yeah. So...
Well, you're a good dude, too, because you didn't run up there and, like, kick him a little bit and be like, yeah, you still like horses, asshole!
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, it'll be fine. We'll just talk.
Yep.
It's your turn for a ride, bud.
So there's another time. I'm done. I'm absolutely done with these
Third
horses.
Time. Now rewind. Maybe if you would have got said horses on your 10 acres, maybe that situation would have been a lot better because you would have handled it a little better.
I doubt it.
I never tried that with the wife.
go home after you almost died three times mad at her. I told you we should have got horses. It was your fault. I love you.
So how'd that hunt go? Did you ever...
Yeah, so did you make it... Obviously, you made it back to camp. You're here now.
Right. You didn't die, but did you end up shooting an elk that trip?
No. Nope. The elk had to have six points on out? One side, and the moose was any antlered moose. And... I had three different tries at moose and three different tries at elk. And between the wind and different circumstances, I was never able to connect.
Did you get back on the horse after?
Yes.
Reluctantly?
The trail?
Just
the
around
last,
camp.
The last leg from that two-track was basically a elk trail back to camp. So that was... pitch black. I mean, on the two track along the mountain, you could see a little bit because of the moonlight, but down in the forest, you couldn't see the horse ahead of you. So you're clip clopping along, and there may be a stream or a ditch or whatever, and that horse would drop in there, and you had no prior knowledge of that. So, boom, man, I mean, it would just rock your back, and going through the trees, you know, it would catch your stirrups and catch your legs, but we made it back after that, yeah.
And you paid for this trip?
And I went and did it again the next year.
Damn it.
But...
horseback?
No. That was one stipulation, is no horseback. So...
How'd that hunt go? Success?
No.
No? Really?
Basically the same. Yep.
Really?
Just... just timing.
It was kind of boring without the horse.
I mean, those were 10-day hunts, so it was they're very strenuous. I mean, we were up to close to 14,000 feet at different areas. Wow. And I had trained. I was quite a bit younger then, and I had trained all summer. You know, I'd go out and I'd put 50 pounds of rocks in a backpack and hike for a couple hours after work. And, of course, in Eau Claire, there ain't no hills. So any of the little hills that I found, I'd run up them, you know, thinking, yeah, I'm in pretty good shape. But you get into that elevation. I think our camp was at about 5,500 feet or so.
Wow.
And we were hunting basically up from there.
Right.
And the second trip, my guide was a triathlete for Calgary University. And, I mean, young guy, half my age. And, I mean, thighs that were just massive. And calves, you know, from doing whatever triathletes do.
Legs that would not quit. Am I
oh,
right?
God. So... We would basically walk the valleys and hunt up towards the elk or moose or whatever. So we'd hear an elk bugle or spot an elk or a moose in a slide or something and go up after it.
Let's go catch it.
And all I had was my bow and a light backpack. And he would – sunflower seeds were in up there before they were down here. Mm-hmm. So he was always chewing on sunflower seeds. And he'd be have his hands in his pocket, walking up these steep inclines, you know, spitting sunflower seeds. And I was dying, absolutely dying, you know, trying to get my breath, you know, because you just can't get acclimated to that when you're not used to it. And, I mean, it was the same situation. As it's just in the mountains. It's just, it's really hard to get set up with the currents and whatever. To get an elk with a bow, it's tough, very tough.
Oh yeah, fuck. Yeah. And then just I'm back to the sidearm thing, man. When grizzly bears and shit run around, they don't let you carry a goddamn hand cannon.
No,
well, and the there was one day we had a moose up on a it was like a winter where the snow would come down and wipe out tracks of timber. There was a moose up in one of them. So me and the guide went up one direction, and my buddy and another guide went up another direction, and what their dad was down at the bottom with a radio kind of guiding us. And the direction that my buddy and his guide took, we stayed up there until dark, or right before dark, and we're coming down. And his dad is on the radio going, get the fuck off of this mountain. He said, there's a sow and a cub coming right at you guys.
Oh, wow.
So me and my dude,
the worst situation
are off,
you want to be in.
You know, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. And there was a stream that we crossed. It was probably 40 yards long. There was up to knee deep in spots. And on our way there, we'd taken our boots off, our socks, taken our pants off, walked across, and then put everything on.
Right.
Well, on the way back, it was just whoosh, whoosh. Right. I mean, right through it. Well,
on top of the water.
My buddy, who was off to the other side, ran almost smack into this thing because this big sow grizzly was doing the woof, woof at him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're trying to, wanting to run, but they didn't want to run because... Right. You know, the predator-prey thing.
Right. Right.
And they're seeing all these great big fresh grizzly tracks right over the top of theirs in the mud.
Oh,
and
no.
It was a pretty freaked out situation. There was another day that one of the hunters killed a moose in one of the areas along that valley. And they closed that whole area down after that because a different sow and a different cub had found the remains of that kill. So the forestry division or whatever they're called up there wouldn't let anybody hunt around there until those grizzlies left. I mean, they don't mess around with those bears up there.
Grizzlies are, for those who don't know, a lot different than black bear. I never experienced that kind of shit. But
yeah, I mean, generally speaking, 99% of the time, a black bear will run if it hears, sees, or a human. But grizzlies, they don't care.
I think a black bear is like a giant raccoon.
And that's not true, though. They're ferocious beasts.
They can be, but yeah, but...
A sow and cubs, and if you corner one especially if it's a sow. Sow and a cubs is the worst thing.
When you mix instinct into, like, a, you know, 300-500-pound bear, it's not going to end well for the guy that's not used to being out in the woods with the bear, regardless of where you're at and what you're doing. A handgun would help in a lot of situations,
but besides
sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Besides the sow and cub situation with a black bear, they don't attack you unless they think you're food. And then once they realize you're not food, black bears usually go away. But grizzly bears, it's a whole different...
Well, the mother with the cubs is a different story, too. Like, it's not just that cut and dry. If you're messing with a sow with cubs, you either have to fight back or just don't be in that situation to begin with.
We had a situation in bear camp one year where a guy was in a stand and he had three sows and six cubs come into his bait.
Oh, no.
And
that's pucker factor.
From the demeanor of this...
I'm just going to sleep here. I'm just going to sleep up in the stand.
From the demeanor of this guy through the whole week before this happened, I didn't know him until then. He wasn't a calm guy, pretty wired.
Wound pretty tight.
So I don't know if he was moving in a stand or what, but he had two sows come up the tree after him one
day. No.
Yeah. And
sow grizzlies.
No, no, these are black bears. This is in the UP.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at that point. Yes, they do.
I think you might be onto something there.
Black bears do. I don't think.
No, I'm pretty sure grizzlies can
knock them down.
I think they're right. I think they're too damn big.
If it's small enough.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
That's why I'm asking.
I think you're right. One of us.
I think I've heard of that before. I don't know if it was true or not.
I don't want to find out. To be honest,
I was trying to look up Nipigon and figure out how far away it was.
But I will look it up after this.
Adam's on it.
The black bear will get up a tree and get your ass. But
so this sow came after him up in the stand, and he shot it. And
oh damn!
It was the same thing we were talking before. He wouldn't get out of his stand, and his brother came to pick him up, and he's yelling. He's like, "Get a goddamn gun! There's bear all over here!" Blah blah blah.
Charlie's everywhere.
So they get back to camp, and the rule in that camp is, no matter if you shoot something or whatever, the first thing you do is come back to camp, make sure everybody's safe, and then you decide where you have to go. So he shot a bear. So I don't know how many of us were out there. 8 of us, maybe. Went out after this bear, and there was cubs up in trees when we got... I mean, this is like 3 hours late. Well, two and a half hours later, there was cubs up in trees. There, you could hear them snapping, the mature ones snapping.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we're looking for this freaking bear at night, you know...
Nope.
I mean, it was a pretty intense situation.
See, when a mother black bear sends a cub up the tree, it's because she's either going to fight or kill whatever's in her way.
Well, and she sends it up the tree out of danger.
Exactly, yeah. And it's not a predatory thing; it's a natural response to the environment that they're in. But I can tell you from experience, when a cub climbs a tree next to you and stops at your tree stand level and looks at you and goes, and mother's down here on the ground, and you start saying, go away, go away. And then you're frantically trying to get out your buck knife out of the sheath because you're sure you're about to die.
Like, it's not a good human feeling. Is he cussing at my kid right now? Right. Are you serious right
What
now?
You talking about? You don't diss my son like that.
Now,
I'm going to go up there, whoop your ass.
I'm going to set the story straight here. This is based on Stack Exchange Outdoors.
Let's do it.
Now, a common misconception is that grizzly bears, unlike black bears, cannot climb trees. While its long claws make climbing more difficult for a grizzly than for a black bear,
I said don't.
A grizzly can get to you in a tree. It will more likely, however, be able to reach you before you reach the tree. So,
because they can run like 30 miles an hour or
35,
something.
35, yeah.
Very fast.
They can outrun a horse in like a a short sprint.
An adult grizzly weighs what, 900 pounds, 1,000 pounds?
I never want to know.
Easy.
I mean, I've shot
far more than me.
I think I've shot 8 black bear, and when they take off running, I swear that they are faster than a deer.
Yeah.
Running out of sight or running to die or whatever.
And it sounds weird to say, but I absolutely agree. They're just
phenomenally fast.
I was, that week I spent up in Canada, I was on the trail going to the stand I was going to take those pictures in. And I came upon what I thought was a four-wheeler. I came around the corner of this path. I'm on this four-wheeler trail. I'm like, oh, here's somebody on a four-wheeler right in front of me. And it turned out it was a black bear. It was just that damn wide and that damn tall.
That's a weird looking rear end.
Yeah, and the bear turned and looked at me, and I'm like, my God, that's the biggest bear.
A Yamaha Grizzly.
That's a weird exhaust system.
The biggest bear I've seen in my entire life. And it took off towards the right out of, and into the brush, and I pulled up to where it was, like, immediately after it started running away, and I couldn't see it. I had no idea where it went. To me, that bear could have been sitting 10 yards away staring at me, and I would have had no idea about it. It was just that fast into the brush, and that adapt at hiding, it was nuts.
There's been several times when I'm setting with hunters, and you know, you got two people looking all over, and all of a sudden you look up and there's a bear at the bait.
Yeah.
And neither person saw it.
Right.
Neither person heard it. I mean, it's just their pads of their feet, yeah. Even though they're pretty big, they're very cautious about how they step.
They have to be.
And if you get a well-established bait with a soft forest floor, they will step in those same footprints coming to the bait.
I will add that, okay, so bears are omnivores, right? I've heard that omnivores are worse to get killed by than straight-up carnivores because...
What?
Yeah. I've heard this. Like a grizzly bear. Have you ever seen the video of the grizzly bear killing the deer in that person's backyard?
Because an omnivore will eat your mushroom too?
Because they don't just kill you right away. They just start eating you while you're alive because they're not trying to... Like, a predator will kill you right away and then eat you. Because
they want you to stop moving.
Right, they just want you to stop. An omnivore would be like, whatever, it's a giant berry. And just start fucking giant ripping the flesh off of you while you're...
Not going anywhere.
So, just throwing that out there.
They say that if you ever get attacked by a bear, you're supposed to hold still and cover up the back of your neck and the back of your head and not make any noise because that might excite the bear. But how exciting is the bear going to be?
Well, if he's ripping into your arm or leg.
Have you heard the audio from the guy that was recording nature sounds for some app or some shit?
No, sir.
And he fell asleep and the bear ate him and recorded all the audio.
Like killed him?
He killed the dude. The bear killed the guy, and it was recorded on the audio.
No.
It is the most disturbing thing you've ever heard in your fucking life.
I've heard the audio of that weirdo that lived up in Alaska or whatever with the bears. He's bear man or whatever. He's, I care so much about these bears.
And then he kicks it right in the mouth.
Yeah. Yep. And then he's, oh, I know I'm up here longer than I should have been. It's getting towards the winter, and these grizzly bears are getting closer and closer, but I'm just going to go to bed at night and not worry about it. And then they ripped him apart on audio, like you got to hear him, because there was a woman with him. He's screaming for her to get out of the tent and run away as the bear is literally eating him in front of her.
And they just, they're not ripping your throat out.
No,
they're
just,
don't they make like
eating from the asshole
like
first?
They make a
fire extinguisher size
pepper spray. Sure,
of pepper spray. So right. If you can't take a handgun with you, take two of those, one on each hip.
But also, you know,
no shit.
In America, they make handguns.
It's like
handguns,
the Wild West with bear spray.
Yeah, because
what, you know, if you send one of them off inside your tent, you're getting maced too.
Sure.
You'd rather get maced or mauled.
Well, I don't think it's going to matter at that point. If you mace yourself, you can't get your ass out of the tent. All you're doing is pissing the bear off.
If you had to choose, what would you rather get killed by?
Covering yourself in hot sauce.
A pack of wolves or one grizzly bear?
Grizzly.
I would say grizzly. Just because it would be faster.
I'd go back to wolves.
Really?
Yeah.
A pack of wolves would take their time, like...
They'll rip your fucking throat out and you're done.
No, but they're going to maul the shit out of you first.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm hoping the bear just swats me one time across the face and I black out.
those wolves are going to be eating your ass, and another one's going to be eating
because they're
going to
be
guts.
Coming too, right? They're going to take a bite and move.
Yep.
Take a bite and
move. And they're going to be coming in from different angles.
Like hyenas.
And well, that's going to grab your shit.
And the wild packs of animals are trained to go for the soft spots on a predator or a prey's body, which a soft spot on a human is, especially males, is their nuts and their butts.
Because grizzlies are so big.
Yeah,
I'm assuming one swipe to the fucking head.
I would love to just get fucking knocked out and then die, as opposed to like getting ate alive by my balls first.
By multiple animals.
Yeah, because they're all like, whatever. They're just tearing and ripping and tearing, and you're still alive.
So all the videos I've seen, that's the reason I said that, was because like when you watch them chase down an elk or caribou or whatever, it's like they... You know, like you got one on the hind end, and then or a bunch of them on the hind end, and then one usually comes up and gets the throat, rips it out,
right,
and then the thing's done.
That's after they get it down.
You got that whole hind end thing going on before you got the throat, though.
That's true. I'm saying. When they come in, they're looking for tender bits there, and
we stand straight up,
and you're not that fast.
It doesn't matter.
Hey, you don't know that.
Oh, I do know that. You cannot run an elk.
Fuck no.
Maybe a guy coming out of the Elk's Lodge. Maybe.
Depending on how drunk I am. Speaking of which, are we doing this sober October thing? Is this for real?
We talked about it. Yeah, I'm
ready for it too. So, no drinking for it. Which, if you look behind you there, Dave, there's plenty of empty beer boxes and there's plenty of sign.
We like to drink.
Yeah, we like to drink.
So the idea is that
I'm digging these Oberons
for the month of October. Everybody,
which is why I bought the expensive whiskey today.
Nice.
We only got a couple more. Two more episodes.
Yeah.
But no more. I know it's not just for the episodes, right? We're doing like a straight up.
No, it's for the entire month of October, from October 1st to October 31st. We do not drink anything. We do not consume anything.
We don't drink anything.
Yeah. Maybe.
So you're saying you knock a big buck down, get
see,
it back.
See, and that's what I want to discuss.
That's what we're talking
there
about.
There has to be stipulations
buck,
here. In
I
this
think
continent.
So, too.
No, man, it's cut and dry.
Just don't make fun of me,
gotta,
sir.
It's got to be cut and dry.
Apple cider. Or coffee. Or tea.
Yeah, can, all right, brother.
I got that bow. Can we get some tea crumpets now? Let's go. Hey, yo.
No, I can even absolutely shock, drink something. Mate. There can be room for celebration, but like, you know, some people that don't drink celebrate with like sparkling cider. Or
I
whatever.
Celebrate that I'm off work every day. You know what I mean?
Well,
so
you and I both, Bert, and I haven't even been working. So.
You know, in most type of fast and diets, you have one day, say per week, where you
a
just
cheat
a
cheat day.
Cheat day. Yeah. So there you go.
So I think if we shoot a deer, I think it should be okay. Now, if you shoot a deer in October, you should at least be able to drink that night.
What would be okay?
Like, yeah, we're going to talk about if you're going to drink,
having,
you're drink.
Having a beer?
Any beer.
Or three?
No,
or
no.
Six,
or
18?
No.
What are we talking about?
Is a free for all.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
Like, that's your cheat night. So if you shoot a deer, you shoot a deer.
You don't want to drink for the next 15 days.
Well, see, that's the thing, because I'm not going to be able to bow hunt, obviously.
Right. But if I shoot a deer, you can drink that night.
I don't think that's how it works.
I think it should work that way.
Oh, yeah.
But
definitely. The
See,
whole
David's on my side.
The whole crew. Yeah, I mean, it's a party. Everybody.
Why don't we let all 200 listeners
decide.
Take a vote.
Yeah.
And let us know what we should do.
No, because to me, if you say sober October, you're sober from day one to day 30.
And I'm down with that, but when you shoot a deer...
I mean, there's always like November 1st, you can always celebrate.
Should there be stipulations like if you shoot a buck? If you shoot a doe?
I know.
If you shoot a doe, you only get a specified amount.
There, a 12 pack.
Now,
we buy a 12 pack.
Only a 6 pack. If you shoot a 6 point, you get this many.
That's not PC.
PC?
Yeah. Politically correct.
But neither is fucking. California deciding to do what they did,
yes.
God damn it.
What if that buck identifies as a doe, or that doe identifies as a buck?
It's true.
I'm just saying.
Well, then you just have to have a deer is a deer and a beer is a beer.
Well, yeah, like what if you shoot if I shoot another freak, you sell a freak, right? The antler doe I shot last year?
Yeah. Extra shots for piebalds?
So what's that count as? Yes. It's technically a doe, but it's a buck. Sort of.
And see, that's all this gray area is why I'm just going to keep it black and white. either. If you're going to engage in a sober October, just keep it sober.
Okay, that's fine.
You have to celebrate. I mean, that goes back to...
I like this guy more and more.
The ancient days. Yeah, I mean, think about the Indians when they brought game home. There was a feast.
They
there
did
was
dances. A celebration. They sang. They got drunk. They got stoned.
I mean, they ate the gallbladder.
Right? They did all kinds of good shit. It's a celebration.
I mean, there's not many Indians around anymore, but, you know.
Especially not ones that follow the traditional methods.
I'm just saying. I think...
No, I get what you're saying, but...
Shooting a deer during Sober October should justify a cheat night.
You guys do what you want to do.
So I'm absolutely...
I'm going to be Jones... We're all going to be jonesing for it when it happens.
Well, that's the point. Fighting off the Jones is why you're doing a Sober October.
I'm going to be jonesing after two goddamn days. After a day.
I was going to say, I don't think I'm going to make it through the first day, but I have to start beating my wife and... talking to you guys about it off mic.
I was so positive I was going to get a deer today that I started drinking before I got mistaken. Right. And then nothing.
Yeah, deer can't smell vodka, right?
Look, I think that's a very reasonable.
All right, we got 2 weeks till October. Let's let the listeners weigh in if they choose to.
Which and we'll talk the about episode it. With my brother, I think we're recording the 26th that should drop. Somewhere about the first, just before the 1st of October. So, we got till then to set the stipulations.
No drugs, no
alcohol.
Which,
by the way, that episode is going to be a shit show because it's going to be a lot of that, a lot of this.
Yeah.
A lot of drink. And we're going to be on video. Did I tell you that yet?
Why?
Yeah, I'll tell you later. Bobby.
Right. We're going to be in Bobby's studio, not this studio.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway. So, I think that's very reasonable. Myself. Now, I think we should do like a wager too. Like the first one to crack, though.
How do we
besides shooting a deer? I know. It's the. What do you call it?
I mean, your wife won't trust system. You, so why would I?
That's a good question. Hey, so are we.
I was looking at Adam, by the way, when I said that.
So we're going to have to, like. I don't know. I don't think you guys would lie to me.
I wouldn't.
There's no reason to. I'm not going into this suggesting that we do a sober October.
Yeah, dry beer. So, shot. What are you going to do?
Right. So I can pull the wool over your eyes. Like, I'm not looking to join a damn fucking 12-step program. I'm not asking you guys to come with me to group meetings or nothing. But we just need to do...
I need it.
Make an honest effort at a sober October.
Rogan does it and that whole podcast. It's good. It's a good thing. So I think we should.
It's
I know a guy that does it.
Actually, matter of fact, it was your idea, yeah. Mr. Ray Cole.
It wasn't my idea. It was his idea. It was my idea.
It wasn't. Yeah, you're right. It was your idea.
I work with does it 1 month every year.
It was
year,
like no
month,
shave October or something. Wouldn't that be a lot easier?
Right.
No, you can drink as long as you don't shave.
When it got suggested, I was like, really? It's October. You drink that. But, and I can find an excuse point, to drink though. Literally every day.
Right.
I'm off work today. I shot a deer today.
That's
I caught a fish today.
That's I'm why happy. I want to plan to do it.
It's
yeah.
cold out. What else am I going to do? It's warm out. I got to cool myself off.
My truck started up fine. My truck didn't start up fine. Fuck it. I don't know.
Right. You're either celebrating or drowning your sorrows every day. So, and like you said, Ray, guy you work with puts that out.
But yes.
Once a year.
A month a
picks
year.
A month. Just to make sure he has control.
You know, we all drink enough anyways that it would be a good thing to do just to take a couple, 3-4 weeks off and see if we can do it. If we can't do it, then we'll all sign up for classes together.
I'm like 5'8" and pretty overweight right now.
You guys really ought to evaluate the month that you do this, though.
Exactly. That's right. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Season is...
Sober September.
Yeah.
November. You know...
If there's a deer hanging in the garage, I'm drinking a goddamn beer.
We can still do October and then put off like the next one until like February. There's nothing going on.
Well, then it's cold and there's nothing to do.
So then we're gonna drink.
Damn it! That's what I'm saying. We have to buckle down. There's always going to be an excuse to drink.
But we got to make a wager.
Always going to be excuse.
We got to make a wager. So like, if somebody cracks when somebody doesn't shoot a deer, like just. Randomly on a Wednesday cracks. What is what do they do? Well, what's the penalty?
You practice the
three S's. For being the first one to drink beer.
Shoot, shovel, and shut up. It's just, you don't tell anybody, nobody knows about it, right?
No.
There's got to be something. There has to be a certain amount of personal responsibility and accountability built into this thing. That's why we're going to do it, right?
Right.
Because we know we can. We're not scared that we're going to fail. We're all adults here, and we can make 30 days without drinking.
Out of the three of us? What are you pointing at me for, fucker?
Just because you look at me like, no, that's impossible.
No, I find it hard to believe that not one out of the three of us is going to cheat.
Before we talk too much shit that we're going to just edit the whole thing, should we talk about California?
We should.
Real quick.
Since I didn't capture the goddamn thing.
Yeah. California.
So do you guys remember in our last episode, we were talking about California ban trapping in the entire state for recreational purposes.
Oh, great idea.
Right. That was last week. Last week.
One full week ago, they decided not to let people who paid for a license actually trap in the state of California. All 70 of them. This week.
That 70 number sure seems hard to believe.
Right. Because
right.
Exactly.
It?
I'm with you. I'm right with you. That seemed like
awful sketchy.
I don't
know what
Michigan
numbers are, but California is a huge, huge state.
And what kills me is 70 trappers was too costly. Too costly
to maintain the program.
First of all, what is there to maintain if there truly is only 70 trappers? Pretty easy, right?
Right.
You have 70 addresses, whatever, check up on them. Doesn't seem that costly to me. And they're actually earning the state money because they're buying their tags, correct?
Yes.
So
to me, it's not like if you're a trapper, you're not notoriously known for breaking the law. Most people that trap have a higher respect for the law and a much deeper reverence for the rule of law than people that don't trap, generally. Just because that's the nature of the business that you're into. If you respect nature enough to actually want to attempt a population control through trapping, then you're not out breaking the law doing it, for the most part.
See, I wish I would have had an agenda before we did this, because I don't know what was allowed before this ban.
I don't either.
But California, besides the Democratic nutso areas, there's a lot of space with a lot of different animals.
Right.
And a tremendous amount of fur to be had for trappers.
Mm-hmm.
And
like we talked about before, California was in large part built off the back of
traffic.
The fur trade.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the bobcats, mountain lions, I mean, the coyotes, fox, all that. And I don't know at this point where they were at with that. Non-residents, residents,
right.
You know, generally speaking, in the western states, if you have good fur animals, you have a big influx of non-residents coming in. So
right, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so you have the income of
out of state,
the gas, the licenses, the motels, you know, food, blah blah blah. And I don't know at what point they were at here, you know, before this ban started with the, what'd you say, 76 licenses?
Yeah, something like that.
And they could very well have more.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of
which is more money.
Shit going on with their regulations, because that, I don't know how many millions of square miles
there
is.
Trappers don't want to fucking live there, but they want to trap there.
Yeah, well, if they were allowed, but I'm guessing that they aren't allowed or weren't before this trapping ban. Otherwise, there would be more people.
And when you think about the state of California, most of what we don't like about it is on the southern side of it. It's all down on the, like, the L.A., you know,
right.
Southern part of California. Northern California is a beautiful country.
It's, I was going to say,
a lot of vineyards. It's a lot of natural forests. It's
no-cal.
A lot of, yeah.
Those,
yeah, you know, you've been there.
Those 76 or whatever, the number they threw out for the number of trappers, I don't know if that was resident or
right.
total, which I find really hard to believe.
Yep.
Even resident, 70 that's a huge state.
Anyways, the problem is,
So they made a trapping ban last week. So
after they took away the legal opportunity for people to actually go out and trap on their own volition,
because it was so cruel,
unusual, and costly. It was costly.
You cannot trap animals.
So what do they do this week, Bert?
So in Los Angeles County, they're hiring government trappers to come in and take care of their coyote problem because they're eating chihuahuas. This week, like a week after the statewide ban.
Hiring.
It was costly for them to make money, apparently.
I can just lick the irony off my lips right now. This is fucking ridiculous. How can you justify getting rid of illegal trapping season for people that actually want to put money into the economy and actually do the right thing and abide by all the laws set forth by the crazy people that live in California? And then a week later, you hire somebody to come in when the trapping legally was too costly. Now you're going to pay somebody a government salary to come in and take care of strictly coyotes.
Who's paying for it?
Ooh, the taxpayer, Bert.
Exactly.
Well, you didn't have to feel the calls.
No, and then the other side of that is there's nothing done with these animals.
These animals are killed, dumped, and
that's it.
Because you made the point that they're actually coming in with helicopters and hunting them out of a chopper.
In most of the western states, they have aerial gunners that taxpayers pay for to kill coyotes. And these are states, a lot of them don't allow non-resident trapping.
Right.
They have animals that are highly valuable fur-wise.
Right.
But they've deemed that nobody from out of state can come in and generate income off of this. So we have to pay people to kill them from helicopters.
They still have to buy the fucking tag.
Now we're talking about the coyotes, right? You know what we could do is just build that fucking wall and all the coyotes stop coming across, huh?
I think signs, just signs that say no coyotes allowed.
Yeah. They'll read them.
Yeah.
They will turn their fucking hairy asses right back around.
Ready?
Right? Yep.
Go you ready. Read that? You believe that?
That's bullshit. That's what it is, man.
Yeah. All of a sudden, Arizona has an influx of freaking coyotes.
But that's the shit that kills me, though. It was too costly to let 70-something trappers...
Bird, it doesn't have to make sense, man. It just has to be. Because that's how California is, brother.
Fucking yes.
Well, I believe it is New Mexico right now is on the verge of banning mountain lion trapping. And they have
New Mexico,
They have a population that whatever their Department of Natural Resource Commission has deemed and has controlled over the years that has a steady enough population to allow that, they're trying to ban all the trapping of these animals because of a Democratic congressperson. I believe it's congresswoman, but... Not getting into genders.
She might identify as a congressman. Who knows?
Yes.
It's hard to say nowadays.
So, ironically. So for no ecological reason, they want to ban this. And from the standpoint of the Natural Resources Division, it's perfectly fine to help control the animals. So there's huge fights going on right now at this time to get that pushed through.
New Mexico kind of surprises me, because that's not like a real liberal state, right?
Well, and that's what we talked about before you
were recording. I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I mean, you think about Colorado.
You just took a shot. I love it.
He'll catch it when he reviews it. But all those states, Arizona, Nevada, all those states that are predominantly wide open territories. They've got Democratic predominant governments in them and are restricting all this stuff for no reason but shirt tail feelings, not ecological reasons. It's just don't want them killed, so it's not going to happen.
Right. They're so right. cute and cuddly until they grab your chihuahua
then,
by the back of the neck.
They hire people to come in and kill them if they have a problem with them.
They're going to ban the word logic, I think.
There's no logic. Out of the dictionary. No logic at all. No,
it makes you want to pull your hair out, dude.
They call it ego. Oh, we're going ego.
You know, and I always thought about when I retired, moving out west, you know, being in a cool spot, Colorado, yeah. you know, in the mountains, you know.
Ranching or something.
But with all that crap going on, how could you even think about it?
It's just, I can't.
It's ridiculous.
I can't.
It's where education is key. It's
the
people that don't have to deal with that. You know, that live in a city, have never seen what a grizzly bear can do, or a mountain lion, or a coyote. They never had a coyote take their little
Bert,
chihuahua.
They watch the damn National Geographic where it shows these freaking bears that are just the cutest thing in the world. And look, right. there's a mother bear with her cubs, and she's right. raising them, and it's so tough because...
I want to show them the video of the grizzly bear killing the deer in the backyard of that.
The difference now with this little generation subdivision. Is they'll love it. Now watch that grizzly bear maul somebody and be like, world star!
Right, yeah, well, like, that's different.
They'll love it.
Yeah.
No, but these kids different. Are being taught this in the schools yes. nowadays. I mean, from the grade schools all the way up through college. I mean, this is being ground into their heads.
Here we go.
Yeah, it really boys. Is, you know, and... Instead of letting people make up their minds, they're basically conditioning them through their whole...
Absolutely.
Their whole lives of, this is wrong. You know, the same thing with work ethics.
Hmm.
You know...
What's that?
The kids nowadays...
What's common sense?
It's deserved. I deserve to get paid.
Well, you know, if you work...
I don't know shit, but
if you
I deserve to
Arby's,
get paid.
I deserve it. Right.
Yeah.
You should make $15 an hour because
exactly.
God forbid yeah. you actually have to read the package of sauce they give you in the bag if you ask for horseshoe sauce and they give you Arby's sauce instead.
Yeah.
That's not their fault. That's your fault for asking for sauce.
Yeah.
You should just be happy with what you get because God damn it, that's the way it is now. It's ridiculous.
It's not their fault you have 8 kids either because you can buy a box of condoms for a couple bucks at the store or you can get them for free probably at the clinic, at the health clinic.
We've said it before, you struggle to get,
you got to pay me more to support my kids.
Yeah, child care
daddy ain't around.
Is now considered a necessity. It's a God-given right. You could get, you know, a clean needle, but God forbid you go get a job.
But nowadays, it's like the more kids I have, the more money I get.
What's
I don't have
the,
to work.
Yeah.
All
What's
I can do is just
incentive?
Have kids.
Exactly.
And now they're pushing this Narcan free at all the pharmacies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they used to call that
we have to pay
selection.
Up the ass for prescriptions. Even with a pretty good insurance yeah. company, you still have to pay up the ass. And what? Here these people are fucking up their lives. It's not a disease. It's a choice.
Thank you.
And we're paying for it.
Yep.
That's exactly it.
It's a goddamn choice.
It is.
Have
it's
you,
not a disease.
You haven't been told when you're a kid that heroin's a good thing to do?
No.
No.
People have been making choices since the
drink your milk and take your heroin.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And we have to pay for them to fuck their lives up.
Right.
That's the truth of that.
Not
whole
only
thing.
That, but to continue to do it. Because if you were going to die and Narcan saved your life, guess what that teaches you? It's okay to go out and overdose
yeah.
again.
Somebody's going to save me.
Because
yeah.
somebody with Narcan.
I get this shit free. I'll
exactly.
just keep it with me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, if I start to flop out on the floor, just stab you in the chest with this thing.
Well, Pulp Fiction.
Wait 30 seconds and I'll be okay.
Yeah, they should be handing them out.
Don't you fucking die on me, Mia.
Never mind personal responsibility and being accountable for your own actions. No. Everybody else will worry about you when you get to that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Hand them out knives.
You got more of that shit?
Right.
It's weird, man. Like when the kids graduate high school now, it's like they have this, they think they're
entitled.
Exactly.
Self-entitlement. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like they're... Yeah,
I don't ever
it's that
remember
participation trophy thing.
Yeah,
there's no win. Kids got to learn
more
that.
And more. I like this guy.
No, I mean, you think about guess. Any job, you don't get paid to participate. You get paid to perform.
Exactly.
And if you don't get
right.
to perform, your ass is fired.
Yeah.
Right.
you need to be able to champion it,
work,
and win. Yeah, and that whole thing. There's no participation for being paid. Well, except now with the McDonald's and Burger King.
Oh, yeah.
$15 an hour minimum wage.
That's ridiculous.
I'm going to serve burgers. Talk about a kick in the nuts. Have a...
And you can't even get my fucking order right.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it if they started like...
And if it's wrong, it's my fault. It's not your fault for fucking my order up. It's my fault.
If you order a burger from McDonald's and it comes with like... Some decent lettuce and a tomato that isn't just slimy, you know. You get a whole tomato, not like two little bitty tomatoes that slide off the bun because the sauce they put on all willy nilly is just fucking across the top of the bun.
I mean, it's not a Five Guys burger, you know.
But it could for $15 an hour. That better goddamn well be what it is.
But they're not making that at Five Guys.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, Five Guys burgers cost $20.
They're making $3.75 an hour and hoping they get tips to make their living. These ass hats are getting $15 an hour
and can't even read the fucking wrap around and the sauce.
And don't care. Like, oh, did he say pickles or did he say onions? Right. Whatever. I'm putting it all on there. Fuck up.
I came back from Ludington a couple weeks ago and I think it was Grand Haven. I stopped at a Wendy's and the inside area was closed. So I went through the drive-thru and I looked at them. I was like, you didn't have enough workers show up, did you? And they were like, nope, we're short on staff, so we're only doing drive-thru. And that's what these places are. And even our company, I mean, we have, I don't know, 600 or 700 employees. You cannot find anybody that wants to show up for work.
Just to make money.
Right. I mean, we went through a list today.
Shit, I'm making $15 an hour. I only got to work 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And I still have more money than I have. Oh, this.
They can't fire me.
Well, that's all right. We used to have a company policy of points. Over a year's period, 6 points would get you wrote up, 7 points, your warning, and then 8 points, you were out.
Right.
Well, we couldn't keep people long enough. So they switched that to every 6 months.
That's so ridiculous.
And we still cannot keep people. So we're going through temp services, which is a 3-month time period, basically. And we cannot find people that want to come to work for 3 months at a time.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yep. I've got a story about that.
And a lot of it is like court-ordered shit. I have to get a job. So I prove I got a job after a week.
Right.
I'm gone. I'm going back to whatever the fuck I was doing before I got arrested.
My company's got a motto. At least it seems like their motto. Bad help is better than no help.
Well,
if they show up every day.
If they show up.
It doesn't matter what they do as long as they're here.
Exactly. And a lot of companies get to that because
I think he's talking about
of workforce.
Again.
No.
You know, they bitch about the kiosk at the McDonald's and Burger King where you don't need people. Robots at our company. They're awesome. You program them. They're there every day.
They do what they need job. To do.
And they're great.
Yeah.
It takes a person's job, but that thing is there every single day. Right. You don't have to worry about them not showing up, not coming back from lunch because they don't
breaks,
want
right?
to.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Doesn't have to smoke a cigarette every half hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, yeah.
I'm stressed.
A kid where I
gotta smoke.
I work part-time up for a guy up in Dowagiac, and there was a kid working there a month ago. He just had got hired in, and he's a high school age kid. His parents actually homeschooled him, and he was a nice enough kid, but he would work at his own pace. And when you're in the industry that I'm in, you get generally paid better. The faster you work, the more production you get done, the better money you can make.
Like a piece rate type deal?
No, it's not piece rate. It's just you earn your potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work to what you want to earn, and then you get paid eventually for what you're working at. And I found out today, I went back to work after my shoulder was hurt or whatever. I go back, and the kid's gone. Got fired. And I said, what happened? And it turns out he got yelled at one day. And he was supposed to clean off, like, a cement pad in the back of the property where they run loaders and stuff. It gets dirty. They want to be able to see the cement pad clearly so they know where the loader's at in relation to the hill that it's on. And the kid was back there for 8 hours. They checked on him 3 times. And every time he was just sitting down, not doing anything.
And you finally, mean on his phone?
I don't know if he had a phone. But finally the guy's like, hey, you know, what are you doing? He's like, oh, well, you yelled at me. I'm not going to work here anymore. You yelled at me. I'm not going to do any work today.
If you're not going to work here, bye. You're going to fucking sit here.
No, and he was a temp employee, and he liked his job.
I can go on for days on temps. Until that point,
he's like, well, you know, I'm really happy I got this job. It's better than the last job I had. They fired me for no reason. I was like, really? They fired you for no reason, huh?
Is there a pattern here?
I've never heard of a company.
Were you not doing your job? You got yelled at. You sat down and had
no reason. Yeah. I know that's what happened. He got yelled at.
I'm not working to you. Apologize.
He got reprimanded and he threw a fit. I was like, well, you know, I'm just not going to work for you today. And then he got fired. And his mom actually called the company. Jesus. Well, no. And that's what I thought when I first heard this. But what she did was call and say, hey, thank you for giving my son a chance.
Oh, right.
Thank you for letting him try. I know he's a handful. I know he's a problem. Thank you for giving him an opportunity to succeed. I'm not mad that you fired him. I'm mad that he didn't perform the way he told me that he was supposed to perform. It's not a hard job, you know. No job is hard. You do what you're told. Somebody above you, chances are they've been there longer than you.
You cannot tell people what to do nowadays.
I'm sorry.
Where do you ever come off with an idea like that?
I work for myself.
Where you can tell
they graduate high school and they know everything, dude. Right.
Well, no, I got out of the job market a while ago.
They already know everything. You can't tell them what to do.
High school taught them everything.
I laugh when new people come to work for me and they're like, I just want to learn how to run a chainsaw. And I'm like, you just drag the brush.
Put the chain on your foot.
I don't want you anywhere around any of my equipment if you don't know what you're doing.
Temps are my favorite.
On this job site right now, just do what you're told.
For what we do, they're
not his favorite.
Not even a little bit.
Right.
Oh, my fucking...
It was a good opening, though.
Yeah.
God.
I love
it. Yeah, no, you give them... Damn. We got a natty light?
Oh, shit.
I'll take one.
Still working on
it. It's been a while since I had a natty light. Anyway, so, yeah, temps. Temps usually work in, like... So the temps we pull are from the South Bend area.
Now...
Hold on! This is not going where you think it's going. I swear to God.
Big area that we have to pull temps from.
The purpose of a temp worker isn't to find solid employee. You know, it's to get temporary employment.
Right. So these temps will come in and they work their asses off.
Hope that you find a diamond in the rough.
Right. Exactly.
Because sometimes you do.
So often you get a minute. somebody that wants to actually work. Right.
Like, we'll get a temp in, he'll come in his first day. I'm like, all right, here's what I want you to do.
All right, he walked out. Can we talk about how awesome he is now?
Oh, Kennedy? Oh, yeah. He's awesome.
Solid dude.
So, anyways, so these guys would be like, all right, so what do you want me to do? I'm like, all right, well, you should pull weeds on these buildings because the shit that we don't have time to do. The shit that nobody wants to do, shit that nobody has time to do, which is why you're here. Right? So, like, the first day, they usually kill it, right?
Right.
And I'll go back and check on them and be like, all right. Dude's fucking killing it.
Actually, want
to
be here.
So I'll show him how to mix up the chemicals. I'm like, after you pull, you spray this.
Right.
Wear this mask. If you don't,
sure.
I ain't gonna bitch at you, but you might die.
But it causes cancer in California.
Eventually,
Prop 30, Prop 35.
Good thing you're not a lab rat. I can tell you that much.
So, right. But then it's like day two, production level decreases a little bit.
Yeah.
By day five, it's like, you know what? Might as well just get another one.
Right. The story I got with this kid, going back to this temp kid, he came in on a Monday, and he wasn't working up to his potential was why he got yelled at. And his excuse was, well, I guess I'm just burnt out on this.
Burnt out?
It's a fucking Monday. You're not supposed to be burnt out on a Monday. If you're burnt out on a Monday, you might as well just go home now, because the rest of the week is not going to be any better for you. You come into work.
So boring.
That's a different guy.
Knowing you have to work. Uh-oh. Go ahead. Are we about to get shot? No. What is this?
Go ahead.
So that wasn't David.
Keep talking.
Right. We can probably shut this thing off here anytime now.
Yeah. Quit bitching about temp employees.
Man, it's just...
So let me tell you, speaking of that, we had a kid. He was a good worker. He could not come in at 6 o'clock. Pointed out soon, very soon.
I mean, could not come in at 6.
Could like, not come in at
physically,
6.
Physically, he was unable to get out of bed early.
Exactly.
And come into work.
Oh, fired nice. Him. A couple days later, his mother called the business unit leader. You know, blah, blah, blah. I need my son to work. You know, he needs to learn this stuff, blah, blah, blah. So business unit leaders telling him, telling her, what time can he make it in? She's like, something about her work. She wasn't able to get him up at 6. So she said,
I hate to do this. Keep going.
I can make him be there. I will deliver him to work at 10 in the morning.
What?
So the business unit leader, as we talked, needing bodies. Right. And he was a pretty good worker when he showed up.
Okay.
Okay, you can work 10 to whatever, 2 or whatever that 8-hour shift worked.
Sure.
Okay, we'll work that out. So, yep, mom's delivering him to work for the first few days. After that, he starts bringing himself to work. And then after it's a few days,
10, and then it's 10:15. Then he was,
yeah,
and then it's 10:30,
yep, exactly.
And then it's 11.
Exactly. And that's how we're coddling kids nowadays.
It's ridiculous. I remember when I was a kid, I had chores to do. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't much. I would have to wash the dishes every other day. I would have to take care of my dog. You know, feed and water, God forbid I take care of the animal that is mine. Scoop the poop, whatever. Every so often I was made to mow the yard. And I would make $2 a week for allowance. And if I didn't do my chores, I didn't get paid. And $2 at the time was a lot of money for me because sure. I didn't have money otherwise to begin with. Now there's kids that talk down to their parents because their parents have a full-time job supporting the kid. And the kid's like, well, you're stupid for working. You could just not work and make just as well.
And know. I need money. I don't want to work for it. Just give me money.
Yeah. Well, no. They deserve the money because they were born. They were raised in this environment where everything has been provided for them. Going back to you talking about coddling kids, mm-hmm. you can't let a kid see how bad the world actually is because it'll just be too rough for their mental, their little psyche. We can't have that. We got to have them living at home until they're 30 or 35 or 40 in the basement watching TV, yelling upstairs to their mom to make dinner because they're hungry,
Exactly. You have to take the initiative.
Absolutely. There's nothing that says you can't succeed in this market, in this economy, in this world. The only problem is how much you're willing to sacrifice and how much you want to try to actually get it.
I actually had a guy tell me one time that his parents born him and raised him, so it was their responsibility to take care of him. He should not have to work.
Oh, because
let's see how those tables turn when he has his own goddamn kid.
No, it wasn't his choice to come in the world.
Bert. That's right. it was their choice to have
him. Take care of his kid too. So,
right?
Exactly.
That's what it's going to be.
And at first, in my mind, I'm thinking, "Ha ha ha, that's funny." But getting to know him,
he's serious about it.
I'm pretty sure he was dead serious about it,
which is sad. That really makes you wonder.
Look, people, take your kids out in the woods.
Right.
For the love of God, just take them out in the woods.
Teach them some morals, some freaking responsibility. It's not asking too much to teach your kid how to take care of himself.
Whoop their ass. Put a fear of God into them.
Right. If you're a current snowflake and haven't turned off this podcast yet, grab your kid, grab a .22 and go out in the woods and shoot something for the love of, and eat it.
No, Bert, you're being way, 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 way too general with that. Take a rifle and go to a rifle range, and you may experience some things that you're not necessarily ready for, like actual people that own guns and enjoy the gun ownership that God has provided them being born in this country.
Show up with your ear protection and your eye protection.
Well, yeah, but just, don't go out in the woods and just start shooting stuff.
You probably should be doing that.
Because you need to learn how to shoot a gun first. You need to learn safe, practical gun control before you just get out in the woods and decide you're going to point and shoot at whatever. And a camera is not a gun. I don't know if you know that. When I say point and click, I'm not talking
just
about...
Just because I'm drinking a Natty Light.
Clicking the shutter. Is, man. The shutter on a camera. You
we've
need
literally
actually...
gone. We've gone from expensive whiskey to expensive beer down to Natty Light.
So can we talk about Buffalo Trace? Because I'm pretty sure it's like the trace of the buffalo that the buffalo used to leave on the prairie.
That shit smells good.
It's good.
I haven't
man.
Tasted
I like it.
It yet, but
that's good. Hey, take you a snort, man. I love that shit. I don't buy it all the time because it is expensive. I'm a Kessler dude, man. I'm a Kessler dude. $3.50 for
a killer label on it.
We're drinking Oberon.
Got the buffalo I like and, it, right? And the trace. We had drove down the Natchez Trace Freeway years ago. And that's another long story, but that's the most boring ride really? On a motorcycle. It's like a 35 to 45 mile an hour road that goes for hundreds of miles.
Oh, no.
It's got a lot of history. If you're a war buff, there's a lot of Civil War history through there. But if you're not a war buff, it's a just long, kind of, yeah. long, long road.
It doesn't matter. You don't care. You get bored with it. All of a sudden, you're speeding, doing other inappropriate things.
Well, I think yep. we can close beauty out. Actually, we were rolling for a lot longer than this until we found out I didn't have record like 15 minutes in. Everybody just looked at
I think we made up for that, though.
So disappointed in me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Bert. You'll get it back in the next one.
No, it ended. Great episode. David, thank you for coming on, man.
Thank
Always
you.
Always a good time. Always a good time.
Appreciate your company. And your little Fu Manchu you got there.
Oh, shit. Before we shut this off, there's a trapping seminar you fuckers are doing.
Yeah.
You fuckers.
Yeah, I say you fuckers. You guys are doing it at Mike's
well,
house,
this
right?
won't air before then, will it?
No, it won't.
Oh.
But they'll get to hear.
The yeah, other the woodsmen are putting it. On a trapping, predator trapping seminar, so.
Nice.
Not just coyotes, just.
Well, it's basically coyotes, but fox.
You guys doing any, like, water or.
Not in this. No, there's, no. We don't have enough time to go through that. I mean, so it's just going to be a. Most of the woodsmen or hunters are interested in getting rid of coyotes.
Yotes. Right.
So that's kind of what we're targeting right now.
Nice.
We're going to have free gifts for the kids and drawings and things like that. So.
I know this is airing after the fact, but I think we're all going to, the three of us are going to try to make it up there, yeah?
I hope so.
What is that?
Oh. Ray's got a water pump he's got to change or some shit. What do you got to do Saturday? No. You're a liar.
I'm not.
You already did it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Pound that shit. You did it on a fucking Wednesday?
Yes.
My
so yeah.
The so yeah, we'll be
trapping
there. We'll
seminar
be there
is from 3 o'clock to 6-ish. And then after 6 is Mike's 50th anniversary or 50th birthday party. Pig roast, bring your own beer, party on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think which, we'll...
I think we had Mike on this episode, or yes. this show one time, and he showed up...
What did he bring?
Manhattans.
Vermouth right there.
I've yeah. never had a Manhattan in my life.
Well,
really. Me neither.
Are they good?
I didn't before he showed up, and it was
I wasn't
great.
Here for that podcast.
Oh.
Oh, that's right. You were gone for that one.
This is my... work schedule.
It has vermouth in it?
It is. Mm-hmm. What it's
my two whiskeys, one vermouth.
That's right.
I'll never forget that. He reminded me quite often.
What else?
Cherry juice.
Cherry juice, yeah.
Maraschino cherries.
Yeah. Oh, like buy a whole
Crown
thing
Royal.
Yeah, jar
buy a jar of them.
Yeah.
Yep. Two shots of Crown Royal over ice, one shot of vermouth, and then like a splash of cherry juice with a cherry out of the jar. You run out of juice before you run out of cherries, but it's delicious. And I hate cherries, so.
I felt great when I left this episode.
Yeah, we finished the first one. He's like, you know what? I should make you guys another.
That was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, you should.
And that was like, yeah, that was a long, awesome episode. So
it was.
We're going to have him back on soon. I got to schedule that.
Have you got a hold of him yet?
No.
Well, get a hold of him Saturday.
Right, right.
That's kind of was like, should we do it in person or should I just like?
I think it'd be better in person.
Yeah. So we'll figure it out.
If we just anyway, all three corner him at his own birthday party.
Text messages and all that bullshit.
I don't like phone calls. But
because you can't read faces.
Right. Right. Text messages are the same fucking way.
I can't read it.
Like, is this motherfucker rolling his eyes? Or
is he being a smart ass?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Are you rolling your eyes?
I'll be there.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.
That is it. As always, thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're going to be sitting down with
Scott Mann from Trolling with the Troops, which was recommended to us by the Eric Bean.
They take bets out. Trolling with the Troops, pretty self-explanatory. But, yeah, they're doing great things, so we're going to have him on. We're going to talk all about that.
Well, I was going to say we discuss more about the Sober October happening. It's going to come up.
Right. If you guys want to get a hold of us at Raxford and Feathers and let us know your suggestions, you can email us at raxfordandfeathers@gmail.com. Look us up on Twitter at RFF Podcast. Check us out on Facebook on our official page at Raxford and Feathers. Instagram, Raxford and Feathers. Am I missing anything, boys?
No. Thank you guys for listening. If you like the show, let us know.
All right.
We'll
as always,
have somebody write up a like old English scroll or something that we can all sign at the bottom.
Otherwise, somebody gets shot.
As always, all music and artwork is done by the Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com and the Root Note Podcast, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Buffalo Trace. You just heard it there.